that special programming and any additional news that warrants it tomorrow here on Radio Catskill. Stay tuned. It's time for the local edition.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Women's Health Center in Honesdale, Hamlin, Waymart, Carbondale, and Lords Valley in Pennsylvania. Physicians and certified midwives who deliver. The Women's Health Center is a Wayne Memorial Community Health Center. WMH.org. From Rourke Law, Liberty, New York, a general law practice serving the Catskills and Delaware River Valley, with an emphasis on estate planning, estate administration, elder law, and real property matters. RourkeLaw.com.
Welcome back to the local edition news and information. It's keeping you connected in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole. Thank you for coming back and joining us tonight. How many people actually are quitting their jobs, and what kind of jobs are those that they tend to be quitting? We'll find out coming up in the second half of the program when we talk to James B. Huntington on Work Shift Live for the latest on jobs and the economy. But right now it's time for the other thing that we do on Wednesday evenings here on the Local Edition. Every week we check in for the latest on local news. We do our local news roundup with the River Reporter. And for that, we turn to the River Reporter's Liam Mayo. Hi, Liam. Welcome back.
Hi, Jason. Thanks for having me back in 2022.
Yes. Yeah. A week later, it's already another year. I hope you've been having a decent week. Time waits for no one. Things got busy in the news world, locally and nationally, once again, right here in the first week of the year. And I've been waiting a week to talk to you about what happened at yesterday's special reorganizational meeting of the Sullivan County Legislature. We got the gist of the news from Patricio yesterday, but I've been looking forward to talking to you since you told us it was coming last week.
Yeah, it's been coming for a long time. It's the sort of thing that happens regularly, obviously, so people knew it was coming, but people have been calling Daugherty's leadership into question for a long time. So this was sort of gearing up to be a very contentious decision. That decision being, of course, whether the legislature wanted to continue with Daugherty as the legislature's chair, or whether they wanted to elect someone else. And it was a very contentious event. A lot of people showed up to protest. There was kind of a drive around protest before the meeting itself, where there were about 14, 15 cars that circled the building honking with signs against Daugherty. And the chamber itself during the meeting was pretty filled with interjections and boos and sheep bleeding from the crowd. And the result of it all ended up being that Daugherty continued on as the county's chair. He got 5 votes to 4, the other 4 being for Joe Perrello. And he just sort of retained his seat. So that's the end result of all of it.
So he's been getting a lot of criticism from people, but apparently not from a majority of legislators.
Yeah. He's been getting critique from a number of legislators, as well as numerous members of the public, but like you said, it wasn't enough for him to be unseated. So because he retained his seat, all of that critical energy isn't necessarily going to dissipate. There were a lot of indications at the meeting itself that things are going to continue to be very contentious, and people are going to keep showing up and being very critical of Daugherty and his leadership. And Daugherty himself sort of seemed to welcome that. He gave a brief speech after...
Well, Liam, let me just interrupt you for a moment here, because we actually have a clip from that speech so people will get an idea of what we're talking about here.
Oh, absolutely.
So I would like to thank my colleagues for reaffirming their confidence in my leadership and my vision for the county. Progress is a nice word, but change is a motivator, and I'm a catalyst for change. Change has its enemies. Judge me by my enemies.
So there you go, a proud catalyst for change and proud of the enemies that he's gathered as well.
Yeah, and that bit, was the last bit was sort of what I was going to point out. It's glad that we could sort of hear him saying that in person. Judge me by my enemies. I think he's not afraid to, at least in that moment, address the numerous people in the room who were being very critical of him. And
but it also sounds like he's giving them a bit of a compliment. He's touting himself, and he's like, judge me by my enemies. Look at these fine folks here. At least that's my interpretation.
True. That's
being generous.
Yes. It's a generous interpretation. But yeah, and I think those enemies aren't going to go away. Later on in the meeting, I believe towards the end, Ira Steingart, the minority leader of the legislature, addressed the public and said, "Hey, I'm going to keep fighting for this legislature over the next 2 years, and I hope you all keep showing up again and again and doing what you've been doing." So if Daugherty had not been reelected chair, there was potentially a chance for that kind of tension to dissolve. What it would have looked like in the aftermath, now we'll never know, but with Daugherty continuing on as chair, I think those tensions and that sort of combative nature at the highest levels of county government is going to keep going.
Okay, and you know, we heard there the people booing in the room the night before the vote. We spoke live on air with Kat, who's one of the citizen activists who was organizing that drive around protest before the vote. So we kind of heard from those folks. What I'm curious, and I don't know if you heard anything or not, that's why I'm about to ask you. Did you hear anything from the legislator who was running to be elected the chair instead of Daugherty? Is it Mr. Perillo, correct?
Yeah. Mr. Perillo commented a little bit at the meeting. A lot of his comments and in the immediate aftermath of the decision, I believe we're largely focused on Alan Sorensen, who was widely considered to be the potential swing vote, who could have voted for either side, and him voting for Daugherty potentially solidified Daugherty as the chairman. And Perillo seemed very disappointed in Sorensen and in his fellow legislators for that vote, or for the outcome of that vote. But I've not heard from him since to see.
But he expressed some level of public disappointment?
Some level of public disappointment, yeah.
All right.
And other legislators have done so as well.
By that clumsy phrasing, I mean he publicly demonstrated some level of disappointment, not disappointment in the public. So sure. you're gonna keep an eye on the Sullivan County Legislature for us, because as you said, a lot of these issues aren't going away, and the new year has just started. So I'll be looking forward to hearing your reports in the coming weeks and months as to what happens next with the county leadership.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the other big story in the area. It's the rise of COVID in our area. There's a few things we could talk about here. But what's Wayne Memorial Hospital saying, and how are they doing there?
Wayne Memorial Hospital is sort of getting swamped, as other hospitals in the area are, by COVID patients. And it's a similar story that we've heard at multiple times throughout the pandemic, in that an influx of COVID patients, many of them unvaccinated, or many of the ones with the most severe health outcomes being unvaccinated, and the influx of such patients into these hospitals are pushing back the other surgeries and other electives and other slightly less essential things that do still need to happen in these hospitals. So while there's enough capacity to take care of life-saving surgeries and life and death COVID patients, that fills up a lot of the capacity that could normally be used for people with slightly more minor ailments. So, and it just completely stresses out sort of an already overwhelmed healthcare system. We've been looking at Wayne Memorial as part of as something similar to many rural hospitals in facing challenges and dealing with a region that is that has its own health problems of its own. So.
Yeah, already struggling to serve a rural area, serving Pike County, even though there's hospitals in Wayne County, because there isn't even a big hospital in Pike County. And as you say, it stresses, it adds additional stress to an already stressed out healthcare system. And to that, I would add the individuals as well, who are part of that system. It stresses them out personally, as well as the system itself. I'm fumbling through notes today just because, you know, the governor in New York, Governor Hochul, did the State of the State address today. And one of the things that caught my ear in what she was saying was acknowledging what healthcare workers have done during the pandemic, and then saying, like, you know, it's not enough just to say that they've done a good job. She said, quote, "We owe them a debt of gratitude, but actually paying them the debt we owe, starting with a retention bonus of up to $3,000 to our health and direct care workers. We will drive higher salaries throughout the health care workforce." So Governor Hochul in New York making that a priority. Any other COVID news that you're looking at?
Yeah, and I believe you mentioned this as we were sort of talking in preparation for this, but the Sullivan County announced that the county has received a number of at-home COVID-19 test kits from the state, and that those are beginning to go out to various towns and municipalities around the county, and that more tests, and I believe more masks are coming. So there's more and more resources being used for the problems of COVID and being dedicated to the problems of COVID, or a surge in resources to meet the surge of the Omicron variant.
Yeah, and we're seeing that locally now. And in terms of the masks that we got last week in Sullivan County, and now these tests, we're also seeing some of the state effort, because that's where these are coming from. Only, and I say only because it sounds like a small number to me, but only 3,388 at-home COVID-19 tests arrived so far from the state. But the county did say that they've bought an additional 5,000, and they expect those by the end of the week. Liam, what's interesting to me is, whereas the masks, they did distribute, the county distributed them to some key areas and key, like, residential areas, but by and large, they're letting anybody pick them up at one central location to drive through pickup. For these testing kits, they're telling folks to call their township or village, all 15 townships, as well as the villages of Bloomingburg, Jeffersonville, Liberty, Monticello, Woodridge, and Wurtsboro. I guess maybe it's because there's less of these tests. There's almost one-tenth as many tests as there were masks.
Yeah, I can also see it being a measure of the different usages of them. If someone thinks they are COVID positive and is feeling symptoms or is feeling sick, they probably aren't in the position to drive halfway across the county to get to Monticello to pick up a test, and could much easier make it to one of their town or village centers. Whereas if someone needs masks, they may not immediately be having symptoms, or they may not immediately be sick, so they can a little more easily make that trek.
Good point. Good point. And also for people looking for tests, if they're relying on others, if they are symptomatic and they're staying away from folks as they should be, they might be relying on others to pick them up for them, in which case picking them up locally also helps. I'm just saying that because personally I've had to go get tests for people in the last week, and it's been a challenge finding them at some stores. I started my search in Liberty, and I wound up all the way out in Hancock, New York before I actually got some. So just some insight into what it's taking to find tests out there right now.
Yeah, and that's where every test helps. Like you said, 3,388 tests aren't a lot, but you add those to the tests already available in stores and the tests that people can access through other means, and it eases the pressure a little bit on those. It means an extra 3,000 people aren't going to have to go to a hospital or go to a store and pick up a test. So there, it's a little bit, but if you add that to all the things that are currently happening and all the resources that are currently happening, it helps a little bit.
All right, Liam, we're gonna have to get going. I will mention to Scoob, we did start talking about COVID in Wayne County, and just the thing that I made note of is tracking the 7-day average that's posted every day through the New York Times online. I'm seeing that Wayne County is not yet at its highest 7-day average of the entire pandemic, but it's really close. It's at a 7-day average of 60 right now, and the most highest before that a year ago in mid-December, on December of 2020, they were at 62. So, and meanwhile, Sullivan County has been at the highest that it's been of the entire pandemic day after day when I report the numbers. So again, just putting a lid on that for everyone. Liam, I'm gonna have to get going, but I do appreciate this information you brought to us here on our weekly news roundup.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right, well, stay safe, and we'll talk again next week.
Yeah, stay safe yourself.
All right, thank you. This is the Local Edition right here on Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. Stay tuned, because coming right up, it's time for Work Shift Live. This is Local Edition.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. Public health officials encourage you to get vaccinated against COVID-19. Vaccines are widely available for all adults as well as children age 5 and up. A COVID booster shot is encouraged for teens and adults who got their vaccines at least 6 months ago, and CDC recommendations allow for mix and match dosing of COVID booster shots. Protect yourself and your loved ones. Find a vaccination site at vaccines.gov.
I'm Austin Bros, host of Jewel Heist. Every Friday at midnight, I spend one-of-a-kind music mixes featuring country, folk, hip-hop, electronic, and just about anything else in between. So join me for an hour of music that aims to fascinate and entertain. Jewel Heist, Friday night at midnight, here on Radio Catskill.
It's Wednesday evening, your radio's on, the sun has set, and your thoughts may be drifting towards jobs in the economy, and if so, we've got the person to talk to. It's James B. Huntington, who's joining us for another edition of Work Shift Live. Hello, James.
Good evening, Jason. Good evening, listeners.
All right, well, Jim, happy new year. Good talking to you. Welcome back to the Local Edition and their first Work Shift Live of the year. Let's talk about one of the stories we talked a lot about last year, people quitting their jobs. How many people are quitting jobs, and what kind of jobs are they still quitting at this point?
Well, the most recent month available came out a few days ago, and it was for November, and we had 4.5 million people quitting their jobs since the Bureau of Labor Statistics started tracking this about 21 years ago. This is the absolute highest it's ever been. It's interesting. I'm looking at a trend that started in 2010, it was 12 years ago when the Great Recession really got going, and ever since then, it's been sloping upwards, upwards, upwards at the people quitting their jobs. It had a trough at the beginning of the pandemic, but then it caught up, and you could just about draw a line that connects all these points from 2016, 2017, 2018, and now 2021 and 2022, it's all very consistent. That's happening now. The people mostly who are quitting their jobs are in the low-wage jobs. Those are the ones that often other companies are paying more, where many employers have neglected existing workers to pay people coming in to fill open positions as much as possible. So they're doing the logical thing, and that's leaving their jobs and getting hired somewhere else for more money, maybe more than more money with the experience they have.
And whether it's directly related to that bit of news or not, is there an ongoing labor shortage, and what's being done to solve it, if so?
Well, not really. It's the same old story. It's like the employers who won't pay enough talk about a labor shortage, but wages are going up in a lot of areas, a lot of jobs, especially restaurants, hospitality, low-end service jobs. Those are exactly the kind of things where the minimum wage really, in a way, is becoming superfluous in many areas. A couple of years ago, the minimum wage was being forced up by a lot of people in government. That's what they wanted to do. A lot of states had put together schedules where the wages would go up. But guess what? That doesn't even matter anymore because the market has just about wiped that out. It's just made it irrelevant. Like, what's the point now of talking about a $15 an hour minimum wage in really most of the large cities in the country? It's employers need to pay more than that to bring people on board, no matter what the official minimum wage is. So that's it's really a very healthy thing, because when you push the minimum wages too high, you get people who would be working losing their jobs because a lot of employers can't afford to pay it. But now the market is insisting, really, that it's saying you will not get workers for these positions unless you pay more than the minimum wage, even for the lowest-end jobs in a lot of places. So that's a real improvement, and it's sort of the minimum wage is what the market will pay, which is, I think, how it really should be anyway.
Mm-hmm. So in some sense, then, that's the market calibrating, recalibrating.
Yes, you know. It is. I mean, the market is speaking. It's going to say what the real wages should be for these things, which makes a lot more sense than someone, especially in Washington or even in a state capital, telling businesses in the hinterlands what they have to pay. Now they have to pay more because people won't work for them for less.
You know, there's a difference between what the market's doing and then how people talk about what the market's doing. And this is a side point, but I'm just curious because you're looking at way more business and economic oriented publications than I am. But when I talk to you, I hear you up front saying, hey, you know, when businesses don't want to pay enough for their employers, they're talking in terms of a labor shortage, but that's not necessarily the reality. I'm curious when you pick up like the Wall Street Journal or the Economist, how are they talking about it? Are they talking about it like it's a labor shortage, or are they taking a more nuanced approach like you are?
Mixed, and often it depends on the reporter or the columnist. They are coming around more and more to agreeing that it is a shortage of people being willing to pay enough, employers being willing to pay what they need to. It's generally been a conservative view that there's been a labor shortage, and even the moderates have come around, and a lot of conservatives have also. In fact, this piece about the minimum wage happened to be in Fox Business, and I think they're exactly right on that.
Yes, and you're exactly right to point out that it also depends on, you know, which columnist or reporter you're reading too. Like, the wrong of me to try to paint entire publications with one brush, but you're reading way more of this than me. So I was just curious, you know, what the language and the tone is there. So that's some good bit of insight. We just had New Year's. We're not even through the first full week of the year yet. What did we learn about the economy in 2021?
Well, we have a piece here by Neil Irwin, who is a staunch economics reporter for the New York Times. And his summary for the year was, yes, you can overheat the economy. So he's saying that happened to some extent because of the extra unemployment money and such things. I mean, I don't have any argument with the money they gave for unemployment. I think it really should have stopped about the time it did when the vaccines became available for people of all ages. So he's saying you can overheat the economy. Yes, it is certainly possible. It's going to be cooled over the next several months, probably the year, because we can expect in March there will be interest rate increases. He also said, Irwin said, when supply chains get messed up, it's hard to unmess them. Yes, that's going to take quite a while. I mean, it's logistically hard to get ports straightened out, to get ships and schedules and such things through on time. It takes months. It's a slow process, but it is improving, and it will continue to improve all year. We may even get some cases where there are gluts of certain goods because they're coming through too quickly. He also said more power for workers doesn't necessarily make workers happy. That is true, mainly, though, for workers who are not getting what they want. It's a situation where people are reading about higher wages, and the people I just mentioned who are having to quit their jobs because their employers won't pay, and on the higher end or on the middle sort of job areas, the cubicle jobs, we have this ongoing controversy and preferences and inconsistent treatment of people working from home as opposed to in the office. And the considerable majority of people with jobs like that would rather work more from home. Not all. There are certainly about a third disagree with that completely, but about two-thirds would rather work from home, and nowhere near two-thirds of employers are letting all their cubicle workers do that. So they see about these things, they read these things, and they're not happy. That's mainly where the unhappiness here he's talking about.
James, we've only got 2 minutes left. Is that enough time to talk about the six golden rules?
Sure, I'll run them off real quickly to How to Be a Millionaire. This came out in Business Insider. The number one, saving is essential, and is as young an age as you can possibly stand. Number two, avoid any kind of debt. Do not borrow unless you absolutely have to. Three, if you have debt, don't bury your head in the sand. That means put together a plan to pay it off. Know how you're going to get rid of the debt you have if you find yourself with it. Number four, if you're in any kind of trouble, if you're over your head with debt, actively contact creditors. Sometimes it can be remarkably easy to get adjustments made, maybe even on the total balance you have, certainly on a payment schedule. They will work with you. The last thing they want to see is you going bankrupt and paying nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Number five, avoid fake status symbols. Yes, don't try to impress other people with things that do not have reasonable value consistent with their money. This is anyone who's read or heard about The Millionaire Next Door, and that shows where most people who have millions of dollars would not seem that way to other people because they keep driving their cars as long as they would be before. They don't have expensive habits. They take trips to places that are less trendy or less expensive and such things. And number six, finally, exercise self-control and be aware of temptation. If you can't control yourself during sales, just don't stroll past all the shops. That's one thing there. Just know what it is. Know what your points are. I personally have a little one like that. I do not go to grocery stores when I am hungry because I'm likely to buy too much.
And not the right thing either.
And not the right thing either. Exactly. But yes, the damage people do to themselves is much more than that sometimes.
Oh, my goodness. Well, James B. Huntington, thank you so much for giving us the latest on jobs in the economy around here and around the world. It's been great talking on Work Shift Live.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, listeners. What a way to make a living,
barely getting by. It's all taken. All right, watch out for those fake status symbols. This is Radio Catskill. We're public radio for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. We're a genuine status symbol because